20 years ago, bombs detonated across Bali in Indonesia, where 20 people were killed and 129 were injured in a series of attacks in the Indonesian island. A Newcastle-based survivor of the bombings has created a podcast looking into the motivations of the killers and the stories of the survivors. Joe Frost was just a few feet away from one of the bombs when it detonated. The Wire's contributor from 2NUR FM's Peter Hislop spoke to Joe Frost about his story.
I always knew what had happened to me, and I suppose I had a fairly good outline of what had happened to the rest of our group from Newcastle on that night. But it was only a few years ago that I started to process how much bigger this whole thing was, that, you know, three suicide bombers attacked in coordination, and something like that doesn't just happen. It needs an enormous level of coordination and not just coordination, but like creating bombs, you know, like there's know-how involved in that. You know, the internet isn't what it is today in 2005. It wasn't something you could just Google. So who taught these people how to make the bombs? And the people that did it had been on the run, you know, they were wanted men. So who was putting them up? You know, how were they managing to evade the law? How were they buying their meals? You know, like just the money that's required just to live your life day to day. This whole thing, it was so much bigger than I had ever really aimed to process, I suppose, is the way to put it. And when I started to ask those really, I guess, basic questions, it started to lead to some very complex answers. And the more that I asked, the more I realized I didn't know, and therefore I didn't get answers. I just got better questions to ask.
I guess one thing I did want to ask is what you remember and some of the first things that you remember experiencing after the blast.
So there were two bombs on the beach, and the first bomb went off to the north of the table that I was sitting at, which was to my left. So I was just looking to the left at what was the ensuing chaos. There were, you know, hundreds of people running and screaming and, you know, reacting as you would expect from a bomb having gone off. And I don't know why, but I just sort of thought, oh, well, you know, our bomb has gone off. I guess that's that. And I was scared, but I just thought it was over, you know, and it wasn't. And then the next thing I knew, I was face down in the sand and my ears were ringing and my legs were burning. And I think, as I've said before, that the chaos came to us.
I guess this disaster it kind of plays second fiddle to the 2002 disaster. And you've mentioned this, and it's a lot harder to find information. I guess that would have been really frustrating and concerning for families, particularly at the time.
I suppose at the time, you know, it's all over the papers, and it was a big story then. But by the time you're sort of talking 15, 20 years later, when I started to do research for the podcast, you know, you Google Bali 2005 and you get sent to pages about the 2002 Bali bombing. I remember one of the first searches I did on ChatGPT, I said, tell me about the 2005 Bali bombing. And it said, well, the 2005 Bali bombing happened in 2002, and told me all about the 2002 Bali bombing. And I'm, you know, found that it was just sort of happening over and over again. So initially, it was very frustrating that that had, I suppose, overshadowed this other event. But then I started to think, well, if the story's not been told, well, then there's an opportunity for me to tell it. And as I say, I started to ask questions, and that led me to people who had answers, and that led me to more people who had more answers. And as I dug deeper, I initially had thought that this was a story that people had forgotten, but I came to understand that it was a story that people didn't know.
For sure. And a lot of people in Newcastle, of course, were affected by this and, you know, new people that had died in this disaster. I guess there's this memorial coming up on Wednesday, of course. There'd be a lot of people affected by this, and I'd imagine it'd be a fairly emotional event.
Yeah, it's, as you say, a lot of people from Newcastle were involved. There were 18 of us from Newcastle on the beach. 15 of us survived the event. And within that, most of the people who were on the beach from Newcastle were parents. So there were another sort of 30 or so of people back at the hotel that were largely a group of high school kids and even some primary school kids. So, you know, I think it's easy to think, oh, you know, how does it affect the people who were there on the beach and the people that survived the blast itself? But it wasn't until years later that I started to process, like, you know, there was a 10-year-old boy there, you know, and he was technically safe the whole time, but how scared he must have been and how that must have been such a formative event for him.
You mentioned you've done this this big investigation, you've done this podcast. I guess has finding out some more information about the killers and their motivations, I guess, broadly put you at more peace about what happened, or kind of made you feel more, well, not at ease, but I guess just, yeah, feeling more a bit of closure maybe in regards to what happened that day.
It's a tricky one because I don't think there ever is closure with something like this. And I have been asked by a few people why I did it. And I guess because it was there. It's always going to be there. And it was a bit of a black box. There was just this thing that happened and it was horrible and it was really, really formative in my life. And it was only in the last few years that I started to process that I hadn't processed it, that I didn't know what happened.
Podcast creator Joe Frost there speaking with 2NUR FM's Peter Hislop.